This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's 4 o'clock on the number one sports talk show for your drive home.
I mean, you know how it is, rocking and rolling and whatnot.
This is Dukes and Bell
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It is Dukes and Bell, Willie P. and Nick Kale in for the guys who are back tomorrow. And 24 hours from right now at 4 o'clock, they will have the governor of the great state of Georgia, Brian Kemp, on to talk with him about the return of sports to the state of Georgia and also his response to the coronavirus pandemic and how Georgia is doing in terms of that. He's going to join Dukes and Bell tomorrow at 4 o'clock, so be sure to be listening for that. Lots of interaction on what we were just talking about, Nick, on the Salmon Brothers Diamond text line, 404-741-0929. Say hello to Rusty, who is enjoying the picnic food conversation, is what he called it. Birdman from Norcross is big on the teriyaki burgers. I don't know if that's in your wheelhouse or not.
Yeah, no, I'll do a good teriyaki burger from time to time, absolutely.
Again, my whole deal was the portability, the portability and the versatility and the ability to have a beer in one hand and a dog in the other hand.
But are you one of these guys who doesn't like to get their hands dirty when eating? Is that what makes the hot dog more appealing to you?
Basically, that's part of the thing. That's the big barrier when it comes to chicken wings.
Really?
That's a chicken wing barrier for me. Because here's the thing. When I like my chicken wings, I like them wet and swimming. That's the only way I feel like I can eat chicken wings. And that's why, you know, usually when I do that, I got to have, like, the full hazmat bib when I'm eating chicken wings. Because that's what it is.
Okay.
That's what it is.
I got you.
I'm a very weird dude, man. Uh-huh. I got very odd takes. Barrett says, Will, you act like being on your phone at the beach at Hilton Head was a bad thing. A woman would rather her man look at a phone than other women. I can't remember what the situation was with me at the time, but that's what mirrored frames are for, man.
Exactly. That's why they created sunglasses.
Exactly. I can't remember if I was single or coupled. I was with my family, so they wouldn't have cared anyway, one way or the other. all they were doing was watching, you know, all the beers go out of my cooler. They were like, really?
Mm-hmm.
After like two or three, like, really?
That's
basically what it is. I get the look after like two or three, but you know, you're on the beach, man. That's how it works. We're gonna talk to Bob Nightingale coming up in 20 minutes about baseball's infighting between its owners and players, whether or not they're close or close enough to an agreement when it comes to getting themselves back on the field. But before we do that, we're gonna talk some dogs.
Dukes and Bell on the sidelines with the dogs.
Brought to you by Bright Box Electrical, from man caves to home security and home monitoring. You find them online at brightboxelectrical.com. You are high on the Dan Mullen Florida Gator train. Explain yourself, sir.
Yeah, I just, and it's not that I think Mullen's the best coach in college football and not named Nick Saban or Dabo Sweeney. I just look at the offense and Kyle Trask coming back this year. I thought he was a guy that was going to beat out Felipe Franks a couple of years ago. It didn't end up happening that way. But their offense looked much better once Felipe Franks went down with the injury and Trask came in. And I'm just a big believer in the Gators this year. I hate to ruffle feathers with Georgia fans, but I do believe the Gators are going to be in Atlanta for the SEC championship.
I freaking hated Felipe Franks.
Yeah, I never liked him.
I hated Felipe Franks. Like, I looked at him and I'm thinking, this is the best you got? And I feel like Dan Mullen, the biggest coaching credit I will give to him, is he squeezed every little bit out of the orange that was Felipe Franks out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, you might not have gotten a quarter cup of orange juice.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean,
that's how bad it. That's how bad his ride was. If you know.
I know, and I'm thinking. You know, you go back to the Spurrier days. You go to the Urban Meyer days. We're talking about really good quarterbacks, really good offenses, a ton of points. And then I'm watching Felipe Franks, and I'm like, this is the Dan Mullen. I mean, I know he had Dak Prescott at Mississippi State, but come on. So I think Kyle Trask is in for a big year.
I'm a believer in Georgia to a point. And it's about everything else outside of Jamie Newman. The fact that you have a pretty good offensive line, recruiting class. You have some reinforcements to the wide receiving core that was decimated going into last season. And you still have a lot of big pieces on that defense. Again, you lose a lot of guys like J.R. Reed and some of the other big contributors. But they have the ability to reload. The biggest question on the minds of a lot of people, and this is what Dennis Dodd had to say when it came to his appearance on John and Hugh last week, is that no one really knows what the Georgia offense is going to look like under new offensive coordinator Todd Monken.
Yeah. Does the addition of Jamie Newman signal that Georgia is going whole hog into the spread? LSU and Alabama adopted it and became two of the three most potent offenses in the country last year. Again, there's no shame to that now that Nick Saban is, you know, and Ed Orgeron has gone over and adopted those principles. I think if you get a Jamie Newman, you can't sit there with him under center or in a shotgun and, you know, run a pro-style double tight end set with 11 personnel or 12 personnel. You've got to get out there and open up the offense. I don't think you go get a Jamie Newman unless you're going to do that.
And that's the biggest question. That's the $64,000 question. That's why I'm mad we didn't get a spring. And I don't even know if we would have gotten anything out of the spring that we don't know already, because Georgia is so very tight-lipped with what they do, and they were not going to show you anything transformative when it comes to spring practice and a spring game. But I just wonder again, like you said, you don't go out and get this brand new toy and put him in a 12 personnel offense and have him hand the ball off to Zeus. Like, that's just not what you do.
Well, and here's the Heisman odds for this year. And this is, I don't understand the national love that Jamie Newman is getting. He's the third best odds to win the Heisman. Trevor Lawrence is 3-1, Justin Fields is 7-2, and Jamie Newman is 10-1. He's got better odds than Ellinger, Travis Etienne, Ian Book. And I'm thinking, all right, so he's transferring from Wake Forest to Georgia. You're going from the ACC, which is Clemson and basically nothing else, to the SEC. It's a new offense. DeAndre Swift is gone. Andrew Thomas is gone. New playbook, lack of accomplished weapons at the skill position, and, you know, no chemistry with these guys. I think there's going to be a learning curve for Jamie Newman. I don't think he's going to hit the ground running and look like a Heisman frontrunner.
I think, again, it goes back to what's around him. I think that people are confident in what's around him. And I think, too, the problem that I think many Georgia fans had last year is that you weren't able to utilize the pieces that you had in place in a way that made the offense look dynamic. I mean, you think about George Pickens, a guy like that. He didn't really look like the kind of receiver that he was capable of until the bowl game. Like, the bowl game, he opened a lot of eyes. And I even think, too, even a guy like James Cook, when you didn't have the normal pieces there with you, even a guy like him, he's able to open things up. And you wonder, again, what the offensive line's going to look like. Again, we mentioned the stuff about Ben Cleveland. We don't know what his status is necessarily either going into the fall. But I think people are more in love with the recruiting numbers and what's around Newman, to where it's a situation where he's able to flourish better in a way that way.
Tell me if you think this has got some merit to it, or if I'm completely off base. So if Kirby really wanted to go to the spread, he could have done this 2 years ago with Justin Fields.
He could have.
But he decided to stick with Jake Fromm because the kid was a winner, even though we knew Fields was more gifted athletically. And now, and no, nothing against Jamie Newman.
Trust me, you're singing a tune a lot of Georgia fans are right now.
I mean, you know, nice career at Wake Forest, but now it seems like a year too late. And if you think you're getting Justin Fields, newsflash, you're not.
I mean, are you asking me if Kirby Smart would rather, in a blind taste test, would he rather have Justin Fields than Jamie Newman? I think he absolutely would. But
yeah.
I also think there was this arrogance And again, it's something that Saban had to get over. It's something that Ed Orgeron had to get over, that this is the new way of doing things when it comes to college football. Like, like you can't win with 3 yards in a cloud of dust anymore when you have these offenses running the way that they are. And LSU is going to take a step back because they're not having Joe Burrow this year and not having Joe Brady and having that infrastructure there. There's going to have to be a lot of retooling that happens with that team, and the expectations for them, I think, have to be adjusted thusly. But the problem is that you still have an Alabama team that has a pretty competent quarterback in Mac Jones. Mm-hmm. You have Florida, you mentioned previously, for all the reasons why they are projected to do well this season. And if you're Georgia right now, yeah, there really is no other contender in the East than Florida. But if you can't beat Florida at what they're doing best, then I think you're behind.
No, I'm with you. And I would say one other thing, too, on the quarterback front is, you know, you can't be afraid to make a change at quarterback if you're trying to go from good to great. We saw Saban bench Jalen Hurts, who all the kid did was win.
Right.
Why? Because they had Tua Tagovailoa.
Right.
We saw Clemson move on from Kelly Bryant for Trevor Lawrence. Like, this to me was a big mistake and a big misstep by Kirby Smart. And now you're changing it, which I agree, it's time to open things up. I just don't see the amount of success meeting the expectation that we're supposed to get with Jamie Newman. That's my only concern.
And Jamie Newman's last season at Wake Forest, 26 touchdowns, 11 picks, did throw for 2,800 yards, but against two, Clemson and a bunch of scrubs. So
right.
I mean, that's the argument against Newman. I think Newman will have a better season and a better optical season because of what's around him, but I think I agree with you from the one standpoint of we don't know what Georgia's offense is going to look like under Todd Monken, because Kirby Smart, for one reason or another, has had the locks put on that offense for some odd reason and hasn't been able to figure out a way to have things open up. We talked about this a little bit earlier on in the program. Reggie Bush, the former USC running back and standout in the NFL, is angry about some comments that were taken out of context from his perspective. He told the folks at Playboy, look, there are a lot of things that are going on in college football that are somewhat damaging to the sport, including the potential for paying players. He believes that players who don't have the right background or a capacity and maturity to handle some sort of surge in wealth is a danger to college football. Many see the irony in the fact that he also got what was termed impermissible benefits while he was at USC. He believes he was taken out of context, but I also believe, like I said earlier, Nick, if you delve into this particular scenario, you have to know if you're Reggie Bush that you're going to get some pushback from people, even if your comments, as well-intentioned as they are, come out the way they did.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You got to see, you know, where the source is, and obviously Reggie Bush the source in this case. But, I mean, I would also make the point, you know, I don't even think I mentioned this when we discussed this in the first hour of the show. There's a lot of professional athletes, grown, mature, adult men, who go broke
right
with massive deals of $70 million. I mean, you read stories all the time about how, you know, these guys blew it all. So, I mean, it wouldn't shock me in the least bit if a college athlete got $25,000 for this and blew it in 3 weeks because, I mean, let's face it, I can only speak from experience. When I was 20 years old, I mean, I got a $600 check from Foot Locker. It was gone in nine minutes.
There was that 30 for 30 they did a couple of years ago. It was called Broke.
Yep.
It said 78% of former NFL players have gone bankrupt or under financial stress within 5 years of retirement. That's at the end of their career.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you throwing shade on people? Again, I don't think what ESPN did was the right thing when it comes to taking his comments and clipping them in a way that made it look more controversial than it really was. But I also think his initial premise is also, like you said, very flawed in the fact that, hey, you can't put and pass judgment on other people based on their backgrounds. And the fact of the matter is there always can be more that's done when it comes to the education of student athletes, prospective rookies in the NFL and NBA and these other leagues. There can never be enough of that, but at the end of the day, you cannot stop people from being impulsive. At the end of the day, people are going to do what they do. It goes back to what we were talking about with the COVID. People are going to do what they do.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I used to do a show with Derek Mason, a former Raven and Titan receiver, and he was one of the few pro athletes that was in, you know, he didn't make back, quote, in the day, you know, in the early 2000s, what guys are making now. But, I mean, he was really, really good with his money, and he saved it, and he said he's set at a comfortable level until the day he dies. I mean, I know it's hard to, you know, avoid the urge to live lavishly and above your means, but if you do simple math, I mean, if you take a bigger paycheck for whatever it is, minus the tax, figure out how long you can live off of it comfortably, it's really simple math. It's just amazing that these guys still can't figure that out.
Something that that the guys who did the Midday Show today, Chris Goforth and Jason Longshore, were talking about today, getting back to the whole discussion about when college football does return, I almost feel like the SEC has itself in a better aspect just based on the geography and based on the way that those states are going about a return to play. Mm-hmm. They're almost at a competitive advantage over some of these other conferences just because of the fact they're going to get back a lot sooner than, say, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and some of these other conferences, because they're going to have more time, I think. And I think that's one thing that the NCAA was willing to avoid, yet we have the gutless leadership that is of Mark Embert, where he basically washes his hands and say, hey, you leagues, do whatever the heck you want.
Yeah, no, and I think the reality is, too, you look at Emmert, I think people think that he has, like, absolute final say in power.
He doesn't.
The NCAA, you know, it's not this, like, massive, it's really the institutions and the conferences and the commissioners of those conferences that dictate everything.
And yet, he's the one who comes out when there's a committee on infractions. Like I've always been fascinated at the selective power of the NCAA. They feel like they want to stick their nose in something when they see fit. Like, they have very selective agendas, and it always ends up screwing one of these ancillary programs and not one of the cash cows or the blue bloods.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%.
And that's I've always found that whole institution or whatever the heck they're doing in Indianapolis is just, I think all they do is literally just sit back and count their money. That's all that Mark Emmert does. He just sits back and counts his money. For what he's paid to do, I have no freaking clue. That's just my opinion. I really don't like Mark Emmert. You bring that guy's name up, it's like bringing Lance Armstrong's name up. Who?
Ooh.
Who? Now, you didn't watch that garbage last night, did you?
No, I was all Tiger Woods'd out. 7 hours of Tiger Woods, I was shot.
I'm not giving Lance Armstrong the time of day.
But did you wear the yellow Livestrong band like 15 years ago?
I did, and then I heard him be a complete jerk after the fact, and I tore that thing to shreds.
Right.
Major League Baseball might be torn to shreds if they don't get a deal done. We'll ask Bob Nightingale of Radio.com how close they are next. Willie P., Nick Kalen for Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Willie P., Nick Kalen for Dukes and Bell on Memorial Day Monday. Normally, we'd be talking about some baseball games as we get you ready for the potential return for baseball. And it's something that Bob Nightingale of USA Today and Radio.com Sports has talked a lot about. We've got a lot of varying reactions from people across the country as far as when this is going to get back. And as Bob joins us on the WaitForIt.com hotline, first of all, Bob, thank you so much for joining us on Memorial Day. What is the latest that you're hearing in terms of where Major League Baseball's owners and players are from the standpoint of negotiations?
Well, people are optimistic. I mean, the health and safety protocols, that looks like that will be done fairly easily. They'll relax some things and get that in the agreement. So that'll be just a matter of days. The economic proposal, the owners will love on that tomorrow, send it over to the union's way. It'll be, back and forth talks for, probably 10 days to 2 weeks, trying to, get something done where the players are taking a little bit more of a pay cut than just prorated pay. In return, the owners, are hoping to get, a postseason revenue. That's their biggest fear. If you play 2 months in the postseason, it's wiped out. If the second wave of the virus hits. So a way to protect both sides.
Bob, let's just say, hypothetically, it did go bad and we didn't have a season. Would we risk having a repeat of 94? Would the fallout be that bad and take baseball some time to come back, or would it be a quick recovery?
No, I think it'd be worse than the 94-95. At least back then, you had the Sosa McGuire home run race to help heal the sport. I think this would be a lot more devastating if it was only for financial reasons. If it was because of the pandemic, fine, something like that. But not millionaires and billionaires arguing over money. I don't think the American public could take that.
Bob, how much of a sense do you get in terms of how much of the baseball player public kind of sides with some of the comments made by Blake Snell and Bryce Harper? I know that those have been the main voices speaking out when it comes to this particular issue, but how much of that has been met with positivity, and how much of that from the player's standpoint is met with, oh, this isn't really how I feel?
Yeah, I think you talk to a lot of players. They're willing to take a bit of a pay cut here. They realize they have no attendance. That's about 40% of the revenue for clubs. Now, that's a big hit. And the prior agreement says in there, if there are no fans are allowed, if there are travel restrictions, which there are, reopening agreement and bargaining good faith. And that's what the two sides will have to do. Snell's comments would have been fine if it was just he was worried about health. But as soon as he started bringing money into it, and people know he's making $7 million, that sort of thing, nobody's going to feel for him. So I think that's why he's been quiet ever since. Nobody has a stomach to hear that.
Bob Nightingale, Radio.com, MLB Insider, joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P and Nick in for Dukes and Bell. So when we look at this shortened season, Bob, is there any team right now amongst, teams that we thought were preseason playoff contenders or World Series favorites that actually could benefit from a shortened condensed season more than another contender?
Well, the one contender that benefits by far more than all the others put together, I think, is the Houston Astros. The Astros were kind of dreading going into the season, to tell you the truth. They were getting booed just in spring training. And some guys had a hard time handling it. Now with no fans in stands, there's nobody to boo you. And even when the fans do come back at some point, who's really has the appetite to do that, considering what everyone's gone through with the pandemic. So, I think they benefit a ton. And then, with the short season, we're going to see some surprises. I mean, last year at the All-Star break, Pittsburgh Pirates were only half a game behind the St. Louis Cardinals. Washington Nationals were, dead and buried at 19-31. So, there's going to be some funny things happen for sure. Maybe a couple favorites drop off and a couple surprises, make the postseason, which would be 14 teams this year instead of 10.
Bob, I know that this is something that people have brought up too when it comes to talking about the back and forth. How much do you believe that the fact that we are going to have a CBA up at the end of the 2021 season is kind of weighing on the players and to make sure that some of these things that are being proposed, such as revenue sharing and maybe even the universal DH, how much of the fact that we have another set of CBA negotiations set to take place next offseason, how much of that is factoring into a lot of people's back and forth when it comes to the owners in baseball?
Well, I think just in the sense that, hey, if an agreement can be reached, this will be two agreements in a matter of 2 months, that, okay, if they can do this, they can certainly get a new CBA done before the deadline next year. If no agreement is reached over money, then I think it looks really ugly where, man, if they can't get together at a time when people need baseball, how in the world they get together then? But, then you might be looking at a work stoppage or a strike sort of thing, next year. So I think that part's in the back of their mind. Like, hey, let's all get together here. We're all making too much money for us, not to work on agreement.
Bob Nightingale, Radio.com is with us. Let me bring it to the Braves for just a moment and kind of a two-part question. If I were to say the Braves win the National League pennant because of blank, what would your answer be? And then also, blank will prevent the Braves from winning the pennant.
Well, it's, I think so much can depend on the pitching and in the young pitching with the Braves. I think, you know, getting a workhorse, you know, a veteran like Cole Hamels, you know, now, you know, hopefully he's healthy. You certainly wasn't going to be at the start of the season. So if they could ride a guy like Hamels, and he brings, you know, the young guys, you know, with him and learn from him, I think that's going to be a big factor. And then if they, you know, the one fear, of course, you have offensively wise is, you know, now you don't have Josh Donaldson, you know. And the young guys feel his role because he was so big for them last year.
The other part of this, too, that I find interesting, Bob, is that, you know, people were talking about some of the different position battles. A lot of stuff when we stopped play in spring training was very much unsettled. You had the battle at third base between Riley and Camargo. You had the battles, the rotation. If you have an extended roster and a universal DH, I think a lot of the questions for the Braves kind of get answered by themselves, and how much better in a position does that put them to have success, not just in the National League East, but also in this AL East hybrid where they're going to have to play teams from the opposite league?
Yeah, I mean, I think the universal DH does help them, because one thing you want to make sure the young guys on the big league roster, they're playing every day or most every day, you know, when it's done to his development. You know, now that with no minor league season, there's nowhere for those guys to go. So I think the best teams will be the ones that are versatile and have enough depth, quality depth, where you can give these guys days off and the next guy up can, you know, fill in and do well without a drop-off. But I do think having a DH, you know, then you can rotate that around and make sure those young guys, you know, get their at-bats.
Something that you talked about when it comes to especially that DH being in place this year and basically a big linchpin of the 2021 CBA, is there any chance in your mind that 2021 isn't the last year we possibly see the DH in the NL?
Yeah, I think it's definitely coming in 2022. So I think next year, you know, unless something gets used in the bargain negotiations, you know, this week, you know, we'll go back to our old rules for no DH in the National League in, you know, 2021. But after that, I think it's coming. I can see realignment and everything else. Just, you know, the hitter's gotten so bad hitting-wise, but I think they hit 115 last year. People want more offense. And, you know, usually DH now anyways, usually a day off, you know, for regular guys. There's not that many true DHs left. So I just think even the National League owners who are fighting it for so long, I think a lot of them are saying, you know what, I'm for the DH.
You piqued my interest when you said the word realignment. What are you hearing on that front?
Well, they've talked about this for years, and they'll definitely realign if they can ever expand to 32 teams, but that seems unlikely, particularly now. But, you know, like they were talking about it at one point, last month, where you do like a Southeast-type, you know, division, you know, where the Braves would be with them, you know, Tampa Bay Rays and that sort of thing. Just a, you know, mix and match with the American League team and National League teams. You know, you're almost doing that now with the schedule. Even though they're going to keep the divisions the same, the fact that the Braves are only going to play teams from the AL East, you know, it's almost like you are in the same division. So, I mean, teams in the East, it's going to be tough. You know, all of a sudden, now, the Braves are playing with the, you know, the Yankees and the Rays and the Red Sox a whole lot more. So if you're a team from, say, the Central, a lot easier to make the playoffs because there's no real juggernauts like there is in the East.
Bob Nightingale, great stuff from USA Today and also our Radio.com MLB Insider. Stay safe, Bob. Thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Bob.
That's Bob Nightingale. How do you feel about an NL Southeast that has the Braves and, I guess, the Florida teams? And I guess it would be – who else would be part of that? I'm trying to think. Maybe the Washington Nationals, obviously.
Right.
Maybe the Phillies.
I'm all for it. I've always been about changing things up in baseball. I mean, I can't wait for the DH to be a permanent fixture in the National League. I can't wait.
If this was maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I would have had a knockdown, drag out fight with you on this.
I mean, but for so long we heard like, well, Madison Bumgarner's a really good hitting pitcher. He bats 190. I mean, I don't really buy into the whole strategy and thinking man. Like, just give me guys that can swing the bat.
I'm more reformed into that way of thinking. Used to be that kind of thing for me, which was a big thing, but now I'm very much kind of on your way. We'll come back, react to what Bob had to say, and also, is The Last Dance the last one of these type of documentaries we're going to get? We'll talk about that coming up next. Willie P. and Nick Cale in for Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Willie P, Nick Cale in here with you on Production Bell. We'll be back tomorrow. Hope you're enjoying Memorial Day. We had a little bit of a summer shower come through, at least here through Midtown. Hope you guys are staying dry, but it's sunny now once again, thank goodness. Very nice temperature day, temperature in the mid-80s. Good cookout, grill out day. Even if you are a communist like Nick Cale and don't like hot dogs.
No, I didn't say I didn't like the hot dog. Uh-huh. But if you gave me the choice, I'm going burger over dog every day of the week.
When you go to a ball game, if you're grabbing a hamburger or a hot dog, I put the poll out, 75% are saying hot dog.
Look, there's nothing wrong with being wrong. You're entitled to be wrong.
Saying that three-quarters of our listening audience is wrong.
I mean, let's face it. Usually, when everybody's on one side of the equation, if you go the other side, you'll come out a winner.
I don't know about that. Mm. That seems like faulty logic. I still can't get over the fact that that Bob Nightingale, who is fantastic, does great stuff for USA Today and Radio.com Sports. Mm-hmm. The realignment thing just threw me for a loop, man. I'm trying to rack my brain on how you would go about doing that when it comes to the National League and trying to realign these divisions. Or what, are you going to add another division? Like, I think that to me seems very overzealous, I would say. But the fact that they're talking about it is not lost on Bob.
I'm just trying to figure out how you could even construct a Southeast division. I mean, the Marlins and the Rays, obviously as south as it gets, but I mean, they have struggled for so many years,
right?
You know, from an interest level.
We talked
obviously
about,
the Braves have a massive following, but where else would we pluck from?
We talked about how much they've been practicing social distancing for years when it comes to their attendance at games.
Yeah,
and from a competitive balance standpoint, I don't know how you make that division good enough unless you put both the Braves and Nationals in it. I mean, you can't exactly put the Reds in there. The Reds aren't exactly a threat to do anything other than lose 100 games every year. I mean, that's kind of the way they've been over the last couple of years. I don't see where that fits into. But maybe I'm just making a mountain out of a molehill. But when he said that, I looked at that and I was like, dang. And the universal DH thing again. I used to be this traditional, you know, staunch National League Baseball is the only way. But when you think about it, they're the only darn league that doesn't use the DH anymore now. So it's like, you know. Maybe it's like you and your hamburger stance. Maybe I've been bullied to the other side now, and I'm where everybody else is.
Let me just throw, and this might be a totally stupid question, but why does baseball have to be so different? Like, I mean, can we just have a DH in both leagues, or have the pitchers hit in both leagues? You know, in the NBA, the Western Conference plays by the same set of rules as the Eastern Conference.
Absolutely true.
The NFC and the AFC. You know, same, like, the only thing that I genuinely enjoy about baseball is the different dimensions of parks.
Right.
But as far as, you know, lineups and strategy, I think it should be even in both leagues.
Trust me, there are people, including my dad, who want to regulate what baseball dimensions are in each park.
Like, no, you got to have the charm of certain yeah. stadiums.
No, I know. I agree. I always go to him on that one. And I say, Dad, that's not feasible.
I mean, could you imagine Fenway or Wrigley trying to,
right.
you know, conform to universal standards?
It's impossible. It's impossible to do. And I agree that there has to be one set of rules. And the fact is, there's no way the CBA would let it go fully to back to the pitchers than it would the other way, because they do not want to eliminate that many jobs when it comes to eliminating the DH from the AL. So I do think that, like Bob said, the DH is probably going to be something that is part of the new 2021 MLB CBA negotiations. The match got 5.8 million viewers when it comes to the overnight ratings across all of its channels. And Turner did this thing where they basically put it on TBS, TNT, True TV, Headline Network, Cartoon Network, Boomerang, all of its properties. If you had a Turner, if you had a Turner channel, it was on golf yesterday, and they force fed that to you. And again, I said this earlier, I liked it a lot more than I thought I was going to. I wasn't totally sold on it going in. Even coming out of it, I don't think it was as cool as everybody else thinks it was, just because I don't know if I like watching football players play golf. But Peyton made up for it by being somewhat hilarious, and Brady made up for it by looking like a complete nincompoop and looking like a duffer, like a weekend duffer, basically.
I like the nincompoop mentioned there by you. I haven't heard that word in years. My mom used to say that back in like the late 90s. But, like, all right, so 5.8 million viewers. It peaked at 6.3 million. Are you surprised by that? Because honestly, I'm not. There's very few sports options. It's a holiday weekend. People, you know, to some extent, still staying inside and avoiding society. I'm not really surprised, because I think you put four goats. It just goes to show you that people are attracted to star power, and those four guys have it in abundance.
Right. And it also showcased all of the mistakes that NBC and Golf Channel made the previous week by having its commentators be way too invasive to the golfers. Like the fact that you got a lot of laying out, and you had Phil basically playing the Peter Costas role and analyzing every shot, like he had the Konica Minolta BizHub Swing Vision monitor in front of him, just breaking down everything, being, oh, I'm gonna land this here short because this is where the grass is darker. I'm gonna land it short here, and it's gonna run up. And then he goes and actually does that. Like that was the impressive part of the entire exercise for me, that I found rather entertaining. And the other part of it that stood out to me is that, like, man, what do you have to do to get Peyton Manning on TV? Why does he not want to do Monday Night Football if he is this funny in real life?
I'm just thinking obviously it's not about money with him. He probably just doesn't want to have to go through the grind, because I think, you know, guys like Romo just naturally get it, and I think Peyton Manning naturally gets it. But some people just assume, because you're calling one game a week, you just show up on Monday night and you do the game. When we all know that's not the case. You're at practice during the week. You're traveling. I don't know if he wants to go through the rigors of doing something that in the spotlight that is so demanding.
I think he also doesn't want anything to be, because he saw what happened to Jason Witten. Not that Jason Witten had a particularly elevated stature, but he saw what doing badly on that platform does to you. And the same thing you could say happened to Booger McFarlane, who, you know, by all accounts was a pretty solid NFL and college football analyst in the studio role before this, but he was completely outclassed by the M&F experience.
Yeah, and I also think that Tony Romo has set the bar so high by being so good from day one that it's almost hard to match that, because that's what you're going to be compared to. So if you're Peyton Manning, I know Greg Olson apparently is going to have TV deals lined up. Drew Brees could very well end up doing something. You're going to be held to that Romo standard, and anything short of that could be viewed in some people's eyes as a failure, when I don't really think it should be.
Last night was the first night we didn't have The Last Dance to look forward to, which I don't know how you consume that. I am a big MJ guy, so I absolutely love that. Did you care that it was told from such a first-person type standpoint, and that wasn't really there wasn't really any dissenting viewpoint when it comes to MJ in The Last Dance?
I'm not surprised, because let's face it, when you are the greatest of all time, you have the power and the say to say, look, I'm doing this, but I'm going to have editorial input. So I think you're fooling yourself if you think Michael Jordan or Tom Brady or Tiger Woods are going to give you material that works against their brand or their narrative. You're going to get their spin, and you either have to take it or leave it.
Well, I agree with that on MJ. I don't know if anybody else is that interesting to me, where I would give them total control. Like, I don't expect Tom Brady to allow you to objectively tell us about Deflategate. And he's going to have that Gotham Chopra documentary that comes out next year, mm-hmm. 9-part series. Again, I think that part of it is going to be very interesting. I also believe that there's other parts of the sports world where they believe, oh, this is going to be a great documentary or this and that, and you'll give them total control. I don't know if anybody else is that interesting that I would give over the integrity of my documentary journalistic enterprise to make that happen, because there are already the J police, as I like to call them, calling ESPN out for basically putting forth a completely one-sided documentary, and they're saying it's sullied the 30 for 30 brand. I don't think that's the case. I think it was the best one they've done, other than maybe the OJ Simpson one.
Right.
But the fact is that if you get to this point where you start telling all these one-sided stories, like Lance last night, he didn't have any editorial control. He was getting ripped to shreds.
Good.
And I feel like he should be, because he is an abhorrent individual. But I'm saying, if that was told from the Last Dance perspective, and you gave Lance the opportunity to sit here and make all these excuses about why he was taking EPO, I think that's a turnoff for people.
See, I wasn't expecting to learn anything from The Last Dance, because we knew about the stories, you know, Jordan punching Kerr and things like that. I think we would actually, and while I don't think Brady is ultimately a fascinating individual, I think he's pretty boring.
I think we'd
actually learn some things about Brady and the way things are done in New England, because Foxborough has been so insulated from really giving up. You don't hear many stories come out from Bill Belichick. So I think we'd actually learn something.
Are we going to find out why he kisses his kids on the mouth the way he does?
Yeah, that's not my style.
Are we going to figure out why he's so particular about his balls being deflated?
Well, if he doesn't like the Pro V1 golf ball, the Tour Soft is much more softer.
Exactly.
But it's a little deflated.
I gave you the opportunity to lay up and throw that one in there. I gave you plenty of cover, because I saw you make that joke yesterday, and I feel like it was just as great to make that one when it comes to odd air.
Mm-hmm.
Willie P and Nick Cale hidden for Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. 5 o'clock Falcon Report comes your way next. What does the Deion Buchanan signing mean to the Falcons, and also the former Falcon who looks like he's willing to sit out the entire season if he doesn't get the deal he wants? Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P and Nick Cale for Dukes and Bell on radio.com, wherever you are, smart speakers and smartphones.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.